Welcome to our study for March 6th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 2037 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. In about 4 days, actually, exactly 4 days, it's going to be early on that day, the Sunday, it's going to be Eastern Daylight Time. So we'll be springing forward 1 hour in the spring. At that time, we've been talking about the Wadi Rayan, which is an amazing irrigation project, or it's the location of a remarkable irrigation project about which Mr. Francis Cope Whitehouse wrote a great deal and drew amazingly detailed diagrams or maps of the Fayum region of Egypt. We're going to see, we've already seen it on one of the maps somewhere. Not sure if it was in this article, but we saw the Fayum region already. Maybe it was a different article. Let's see if we can find it here. But today we're going to be doing chapter 8, paragraph 1, at the same time as we're concluding the book of Zechariah in the Bible, and we're reading about the singers that David appointed in 24 divisions to go along with the 24 divisions of the priests who served at the temple in 24 divisions 1 week after another, with the divisions changing from week to week. Let's see if I can find a map. Is there a map? Wait, there's Egypt. Yeah, so there's Egypt. There's Egypt at night. Look at this. Oh, this is a beautiful picture. I mean, it's like a map. It's a satellite picture. It's not a map, but there's the Fayum region right here. So in this map, there's a beautiful, beautiful map. You can see how many cities are near Cairo. Cairo is about here on the map. It's to the right of the Nile, to the east of it, just up here. And then to the west, I think, is Giza, where the Great Pyramid is over here. That's where all that those lights are. And then, so the bright lights are in the most populated areas. The Giza is a tourist center now, so that's probably why those lights are so bright. But here's the Fayum region, right here. This is what we're talking about now. And if you look down here, I think this is Thebes, right here, where the river bends. That's probably what that is. I don't think, unless Thebes is further, it seems to me Thebes might be, maybe we can find a map, but I don't want to break off from our study. Let's see, okay, let's look at a map. Here we are. We'll look at the Nile, okay? A map of the Nile or Egypt or something. Here we go. This will be good. Egypt map. Maybe you can see, no. Egypt, just look at Egypt. It'll probably give us a map. Yeah, that's not very useful, is it? I think we'll look at... Maybe we'll look at Thebes or Cairo. Thebes. Egypt. Okay. Let's see what we see. Oops, it doesn't exist. Okay, let's just look up Thebes. Thebes. Here it is. Yeah, there we are. Yeah, so that is right, probably. We saw, this is the Fayum region here. Right here, this is the Fayum region. There's Lake Moeris, that little body of water there. And then we have the Nile Delta, which is somewhere, it's all of this area here, somewhere up here in the north. There's the Fayum, and then there's Thebes way down here, so there's quite a big distance to get to Thebes. So when we look at our image here, yeah, Thebes is not even on this map, possibly, or in this picture, maybe. What were we looking at there? Where were we? We're here. Did we switch from where we were? No, Antifi, I don't know what we were looking at. Here. No, here. No. We had a map just now. We were looking at Thebes. Did I maybe? No. It's like it disappeared while I was looking at it, or something, which doesn't make sense. Anyway, we can look at Thebes again. Or what were we looking at where we had the map of Thebes? Don't remember. Thebes. Egypt. Here it is, right? Yeah. There. So here you see there's quite a great distance. But there is a little somewhat of a bend in the river prior to Thebes. Unfortunately, it's giving me a pop-up text. There are a few bends in the river, but not many, north of Thebes. So, from this picture, it's hard to tell. This might be Thebes. Very easily could be Thebes, yeah. Very easily. And that's where the tombs of the pharaohs are located, is at Thebes. In the south there, on that satellite view, but that's the Fayum. Right here, this less brightly lit area, fairly near the delta, but you know, nearer to the delta than to Thebes, certainly. So chapter 8, paragraph 1, we're looking at this remarkable, the remarkable graph of the slave prices. We're in chapter 8, so we've covered all of these chapters. Quite a lot of material, and this is the graph right here of slave prices in ancient times. I think maybe the noises that we've been hearing are caused by static electricity or something. It's possible. So I don't want to touch anything if I can avoid it. Taking off my hats could even create that could create static. But this is the graph of slave prices in ancient times. Price in shekels per slave versus date. With the common era beginning here on the right. So these are BCE years. In the BCE year 2725, which is where this line intersects, the price of 0 shekels for a slave, that's just somewhere around the time, depending on when we assume that the Tower of Babel was constructed, or you know when it was begun to be constructed. That's somewhere in the middle of the construction of the tower, is what I say here in the article. The dispersion was, in our other articles, in many of our articles, we've always maintained the dispersion occurred in 2745. So, and they continued building a little bit sometime after that. So this may not be the midpoint of the Tower of Babel. It might, but it's sometime near to the construction of the Tower of Babel, where this line intersects the x-axis, not the y-axis, it's the x-axis of the graph. Little ones, that's what we call this. The y-axis is the one that goes vertical. Now, 1000 BCE is slightly earlier than the latest point that we have here for Menahem, king of Israel, 770 BCE. We have a point when the price of a slave was 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 shekels. Whereas in the days of Moses, the price of a slave was 30 shekels. And in the days of Joseph, it was 20 shekels. And so that's remarkable. And then we have from the third dynasty of Ur, in 2300 BCE, we have a price of 10 shekels. This graph is a beautiful straight line. So that tells us something, apparently. Or Jehovah's trying to tell us something, it looks like, from that straight line. Namely, he's trying to tell us that our dating is correct for all of our chronology, and also that the time of the Tower of Babel is also correct. At the point where, or more importantly, he's telling us something about what caused slavery. Joseph was sold as a slave by his brothers for 20 shekels, counting it in the year that we have determined to be 1936 BCE. The graph at left shows how slave prices given in the Holy Book and one earlier source align with 2725 as Babel, this being the midpoint of the construction of that tower. The trend is a linear inflation rate given by 4 points, except that the slave price is zero during Babel's heyday. The remarkable straightness of the line we understand as a consequence of our choice of chronology and may certainly not be ignored as the convincing evidence of God's timing. The alignment to the early years after 2774 BCE is further in harmony with the eclipse of Nimrod, which signals July 18th, 2774 BCE, as the beginning of preeminent nationhood. At this time, the price of slaves is zero and held to be a consequence of cooperation, we understand, when the common tongue of mankind held a common ambition amongst free men. So that was what Jehovah revealed to me through this graph. I could understand only the graph if I believed that that slavery came about because of this confusion of the tongues. Because the confusion of the tongues was the, which was also, by the way, the beginning of the first, it was the beginning of nationhood. It was the beginning, the Tower of Babel, when Jehovah confused the tongues, so the people could no longer understand each other, little children. That was the origin of language, different languages, that is, confusion of tongues. But then, all of a sudden, a slave became worth something in terms of monetary value, whereas before that, it would have been priceless or something, or zero. But also, in other words, if you can put a valuation on it, if you can put any valuation on something, that means perhaps that it's worth less than it would have been worth, in the situation where things were ideal. But as time went on, the price of slaves went up, so that's not really what it's saying. But it's saying that, very curiously, they just didn't have slaves. It's saying that there wasn't such thing as a slave at the time of the cooperation at the Tower of Babel. Everyone was working together in harmony at that time, so there was no need for slaves. That's what it's saying. And isn't that a remarkable thing? I mean, it's so remarkable that I discovered that out of the blue. Because I'm trained as an engineer and a physicist, I look for trends, and I look for data that I can graph, and then when I drew the graph, I couldn't believe it's a straight line. I didn't make it up. It's just a straight line. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 is our scripture for today, little ones, our proverb. Guard your feet, it says, whenever you go to the house of the true God, and let there be a drawing near to hear, rather than to give a sacrifice as the stupid ones do, for they are not aware of doing what is bad. Does that mean it's always bad to give a sacrifice? You know, obviously that's probably not the case. It's not always bad to give a sacrifice or to make a sacrifice, but to go to the house of God for the purpose of making a sacrifice, that is what's being evidently talked about there. Because that's sort of a showy display, right? To put on a display in front of people to do that. 1 Chronicles 25. So this chapter is about the service groups that David formed, little children, and the chiefs of the service groups. It says, separated for the service along with David, some of the sons of Asaph, Heman, and Jeduthun, the ones prophesying with the harps they separated for the service. These three men, they were the sons of these three men they separated for the service. And it was David and the chiefs of the service groups that did this. And the ones that were separated for the service were the ones prophesying with the harps, with the stringed instruments, and with the cymbals. Isn't that interesting? They were prophesying, it says. So singing is prophesying. That's what that says. If it's done for the purpose of serving the true God. And they were prophesying with instruments of music and with the cymbals, which is another instrument evidently not so musical as the others, but it's still an instrument of music. And from their number, the official men for their service came to be. From these sons of these three men, the official musicians came to be. Of the sons of Asaph, Zachar and Joseph and Nethaniah and Asherelah, the sons of Asaph under the control of Asaph, the one prophesying under the control of the king. Of Jeduthun, the sons of Jeduthun, Gedaliah and Ziri and Jeshaya and Shimei and Hashabiah and Mattathiah, six under the control of their father Jeduthun, who was prophesying with the harp for thanking and praising Jehovah. Of Heman, the sons of Heman, Bakiah, Mattaniah, Aziel, Shebuel, Jeremoth, Hananiah, Hanani, Eliatha, Gedalti, and Romamti-Ezer, Joshbekasha, Melothi, Hother, Mahazioth. All these were sons of Heman, a visionary of the king and the things of the true God, to raise up his horn, that is, the horn of God. Thus the true God proceeded to give Heman 14 sons and 3 daughters. All these were under the control of their father in song at the house of Yahweh, with cymbals, stringed instruments, and harps for the service of the house of the true God. Under the control of the king were Asaph and Jeduthun and Heman, and the number of them together with their brothers trained in song to Jehovah, all experts, came to be 288. So they cast lots as to the things to be taken care of, the little being just the same as the great, the expert along with the learner. And the lot proceeded to come out, the first belonging to Asaph for Joseph, for Gedaliah the second, he and his brothers and his sons were 12, the third for Zachar, his sons and his brothers 12, the fourth for Izri, his sons and his brothers 12, the fifth for Nethaniah, his sons and his brothers 12, the sixth for Bakiah, his sons and his brothers 12, the seventh for Jesharelah, his sons and his brothers 12, the eighth for Jeshaya, his sons and his brothers 12, the ninth for Mattaniah, his sons and his brothers 12, the tenth for Shimei, his sons and his brothers 12, the 11th for Azarel, his sons and his brothers 12, the 12th for Hashabiah, his sons and his brothers 12, the 13th, Shubiel, his sons and his brothers 12, for the 14th, Mattathiah, his sons and his brothers 12, for the 15th, for Jeremoth, his sons and his brothers 12, for the 16th, for Hananiah, his sons and his brothers 12, for the 17th, for Joshbekasha, for the 18th, for Hanani, for the 19th, for Melothi, for the 20th, for Eliatha, for the 21st, for Hothir, for the 22nd, for Gedalti, for the 23rd, for Mahazioth, for the 24th, for Romamti-Ezer, his sons and his brothers 12. And that's the conclusion of 1 Chronicles 25. We see 24 divisions of musicians to go along with the 24 divisions of priests that also served 1 week at a time. So, let's move now to Hosea, the final chapter of the book of Hosea, which is a short chapter. Do come back, O Israel, and little children. It also means God's people today. Israel. Do come back, O Israel, to Yahweh, your God, for you have stumbled in your error. Take with yourselves words and come back to Yahweh. Say to him, all you people, may you pardon error and accept what is good, and we will offer in return the young bulls of our lips. Assyria itself will not save us. Upon horses we shall not ride. And no more shall we say, O our God, to the work of our hands, because it is by you that a fatherless boy is shown mercy. I shall heal their unfaithfulness. I shall love them of my own free will, because my anger has turned back from him. I shall become like the dew to Israel. He will blossom like the lily and will strike his roots like Lebanon. His twigs will go forth, and his dignity will become like that of the olive tree, and his fragrance will be like that of Lebanon. They will again be dwellers in his shadow. Meaning, the shadow of Israel. They will grow again and will bud like the vine. His memorial will be like the wine of Lebanon. Ephraim will say, what do I have to do any longer with the idols? I myself shall certainly give an answer, Yahweh said, and I shall keep looking on him. I am like a luxuriant juniper tree. From me must fruit for you be found. And that was what Yahweh said through the pen of Hosea, or perhaps even the mouth of Hosea as he was preaching. And the final verse of the book of Hosea, end of chapter 14, who is wise, verse 9, that he may understand these things? Discreet, that he may know them. For the ways of Yahweh are upright, and the righteous are the ones who will walk in them. But the transgressors are the ones who will stumble in them. That's the end of the book of Hosea. The end of that chapter 14, which was the final chapter of Hosea, if we look here. 14 chapters, so we'll be looking at, possibly, next time, the book of Joel, chapter 1. And that's interesting. Depending on what we decide we're going to be studying at that time, we might or might not be doing that. And what else are we going to be studying? Well, we'll be doing probably 1 Chronicles 26 at that time tomorrow. For the divisions of gatekeepers, it's going to be talking about the gatekeepers, the divisions of the gatekeepers. And that's interesting because it mentions fourth, fifth, and sixth, and seventh. And eighth. Let's see. Right, I don't know how. It's not necessarily 24 divisions. I'm just checking to see. It doesn't look like there are 24 divisions of gatekeepers, but there wouldn't have to be if they didn't have enough gates for that many gatekeepers. Yeah, it helps to look ahead a little bit in the study because then the reading will make more sense if we've prepared our minds. I don't want to touch anything because it might have static electricity that I've got on my body jumping around and causing havoc, creating havoc in the audio. Maybe even the video, I don't know. The audio, it affects the audio apparently. Something is wrong with my system, if that happens, perhaps. I don't have a good ground, maybe, in my system. There's some, because static electricity shouldn't do that, I don't think. Not normally. But what else can we talk about? You know, I want to talk about so many things, because I want to talk about vitamins and, you know, nutrients and things like that, because people just don't get it. They don't get it. They don't believe it, and they don't understand. It means their very lives. Like, I mean, the difference between the way I feel now and the way I felt even a few months ago or years ago, but even a few months ago, is a big difference. It's a huge difference, because last night I got by with 3 hours sleep, and I don't know how I did that. And that wasn't nighttime. I slept during the daytime, because I haven't slept for 12 hours past my normal time, you know, my normal bedtime. I'm 12 hours in arrears of sleep, at least 12 hours. I went to bed in the afternoon, so I'm actually more than 12. I went to bed at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So if my normal bedtime was 2 in the morning, I was 12 hours after that when I went to bed. So I keep getting later and later, and you would think it would catch up with me. And sometimes it does, but it doesn't necessarily. But I have to let it catch up, because, or either that, or I have to go on to the next day so that I can get back to a daylight schedule at some point. And I want to be on a daylight schedule when I have I'm hoping to get this Saturday, maybe even a new washer and dryer, which I just ordered because my washing machine broke down. So my washing machine broke down sometime during the last wash, I guess. And it may have broken down on the very last spin or whenever, because I never noticed it was broken until this time when I tried to do a laundry yesterday. And whatever day, was it yesterday? Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, it was, all the hours are different. I did the laundry in the very early in the morning, I think, like, you know, 2 or 3 in the morning. But without the washer working, I had to just, it would fill with water, but it wouldn't function after that. So it was full of water, not function, or, you know, up to the level I needed for the clothing, but, and it had the soap in it, but the washer wasn't agitating, so I couldn't figure out at first what would I do. Then I realized, well, okay, I realized I can stir it in the water with a broomstick, and, you know, poke it with the broomstick to try and get the clothes washed. And then I could, but then I thought, well, how will I get the water out, right? And how will I rinse the clothes? And so then I remembered, well, okay, I can wring the clothes out. But I remembered, first of all, that I had this submersible pump, which I bought for my sump pump. In case the sump pump breaks down, I have a submersible pump. And it works very well, although I'd never tried it before. But I knew that it worked because I plugged it in and it starts running as soon as you plug it in. I knew it worked. But it works really well. Like, it pumps water really fast. But I couldn't pump the water out of the washing machine while the clothes were in it, because they'd get clogged up in the pump. You know, they wouldn't get caught. They just suck up against the holes on the bottom of the pump that draw the water. But I didn't think of that. I just knew I could not do it with the clothes in there, because I thought, you know, I was imagining the older style pumps or the different style with turbines, and the clothes would just get torn to pieces if you used a pump like that. So I didn't even think about putting the pump in when the clothes were in there. But what I realized was my sink still works. Also, it's a big sink, but there's no pump on the sink. I can't pump the water out of it because the motor broke down on the pump quite some months or years ago. So I don't need that sink to pump the water if I have a submersible pump, because I can just pump the water out the window, which is what I did. And I had wrung the clothes out in the washing machine, I rinsed them in the sink water. And when that water got dirty, you know, I finished rinsing the clothes that were in that sink, pumped the water out of the sink out the window. Then I wrung some more clothes out from the washer and put them in a new, a refilled sink full of water. Wrung them out again, So that was my rinsing cycle, and then I pumped the water out of the sink out the window again. And then after I finally got all the clothes out of the washer, I pumped the water in the washer, which was dirty, pumped that out the window. And then I had all these clothes that were ready to go in the dryer. So I put them in the dryer, but the dryer doesn't function correctly. It gets very, very hot. So, you know, because the thermostat's broken. So I can damage my garments. They might catch fire maybe or something if they're cotton. I'm not sure what happens if they get too hot. But with polyester, which is all my technical garments, they would melt, right? If I had them in, that's what happens. Or they burn. But they get very bad. They don't catch flame, but they burn. It damages the fibers, and you can smell the burning of the polyester. I know because I've had that happen when I first realized that the thermostat was broken. But it still works. The dryer still works. You just have to monitor very carefully the clothes that are in it and not use a thermostat to determine when the drying is finished, which it used to do. You have to determine by a timer. So, and then I can come down before the timer is even run out, and I can check while the clothes are hot, which is the best way to do it, because any clothing that's hot is dry, as long as it's hot and not wet. In other words, you know, you can tell when something is wet, but if it's hot and it's not wet, you know it's dry and it's finished, and you take that clothing out and you keep drying the rest of it and adding more wet clothing. So it's very possible to still use that dryer. Just takes quite a bit of skill and diligence. So I can still use it as a backup, but I'm getting a new dryer as well, because that dryer could quit at any time, I suppose. But it works. So, and it's been, I think my parents used it for, I don't know how many years they used it, but if they used it for as long as I think, then that dryer is, I mean, we had that dryer since about, for about 30, let's see, 40, not 40 years, but something like 35 years or 36 or so. My wife and I had that dryer, but she's passed now, but I've had that dryer for 37 years. And my parents had it for a number of years because they bought a new one to replace it. And I think they had that dryer for like 30 years. That dryer could, that's what I think, but it sounds crazy, but that dryer might be 67 years old. Doesn't sound right though, does it? But if we got it in the 80s, they bought it in the 50s, no. It's not that old. It's not from the 50s. They probably had it for something like 10 years or something. So that dryer might be 47 years old. It still works. Anyway, we're done our study. It's March 6th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 21:09 hours, coming up to 21:10 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. I have enjoyed this study and being with you again, little children. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.